Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri, inviting you to discover what research, projects and events are taking place at the University of Malta. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today three engineers who were the graduates, the first graduates of the first engineering course at the University of Malta. I'll just introduce them. There's engineer Tom Cousins, who graduated on this course, the BSc Honours Engineering in 1966, and went on to be a lecturer at the Electrical Engineering Department at the University, and co-founded and managed the Technoline Limited, director of Technoline, and did various other things about which we shall speak as we go along. There's engineer Antoine Riolo, who again graduated in 1966, BSc, Mechanical Engineering, and went on to do an MSc at the University of Glasgow. He became a professional officer at Enel Malta and then went on to be an officer at the Electrical and Mechanical Engineering Unit at OPM and did various other things. There's also engineer Victor Chabaras, who again graduated in 1966 and took up his first job with the Post and Telephones Department of the Government of Malta. He went on to do several things, went abroad to further his studies, and I hope that we shall also be hearing about the work that that he did. Welcome to you all, gentlemen. Thank you for being here. As I said, this was the first degree course at the University of Malta in engineering. Prior to that, there were engineers in Malta, but they would have been people who would have gone abroad to do their degree studies, perhaps with a scholarship from the dockyard at that time or something like that. But this is an important moment for Malta, isn't it? What was the scenario when you first started the course? Perhaps we can start with Engineer Cousins.
My friend here, Victor Chabaras, he knocked on my mother's door one day and he said, "Tom, I heard there's a new engineering course." I said, "What do you think?" So we didn't give it much thought. I mean, we all had good results in maths and physics, you know, and chemistry. So we just went for it. It was something new, you know, so we thought this is a good opportunity.
And what about the others?
As Tom was saying, I had seen this on the Government Gazette, the fact that this new course was going to be established starting from October 1963. In fact, at the time, I was studying bookkeeping because I thought I will go for the exam for an executive with the civil service. Incidentally, I was also offered scholarship with the MMU at the time to study as an analyst in Ireland. But when I saw this advert, I discussed this, as Tom was saying, with my colleague, and I decided that this is the way I should go.
The options at that time were classics, languages and classics, or science and engineering. Science and engineering was more suited for me than classics. Besides, my father was a motor mechanic, had a big garage and used to do a lot of engineering work, and sort of had a background. So the choice was obvious.
The degree was important because, I mean, you could have done other work in the area, but to have a degree obviously takes you up to another level, really, doesn't it? How important was that, I mean, to you, to have that degree, really?
Our parents were always pushed us, you know, to give us a good education. They did all they could, and I think we were brought up with that frame of mind that to be successful in life, you better study and go as high as you can. You have a chance of getting a better job then, you know, that was the mentality at the time. At the same time, engineering was quite a challenge for us, you know, as students. It was a nice challenge to take. So we thought about it of doing something we enjoyed and having better chance of employment later on.
Before we went on air, we were talking about the actual building itself, where you went. It was the new building at Mcida. So was that exciting, going into a new place?
The excitement started from the very first day, because incidentally, when the course started, this new building, which was called the Polytechnic and later the Malta College of Arts, Science and Technology, was not yet completely finished. So we had to do with the old dockyard school at Senglea, So our course started actually in Senglia, and our lecture rooms were, you know, either just a room behind the library or a flat in one of the streets there, because there weren't, these facilities, and of course no labs in the area. However, we were aware that by January 1964, at least part of the building would have been complete, and so we'd move there, and so we did. However, it was not complete in the sense, only the part, where we could at least have lectures and start having some lab work.
My memory is not so good, but I still remember when we were at Senglia, we always had the carrot that we're moving to the new building where the labs will be. So we postponed our all practical work of the first year to the last period, when we got access to the labs. I still remember lecture rooms without tiles on the floor, the tables wobbling, sirens sounding, and we had to lie on the floor, almost on the floor, crouched behind the walls, because they were rock cutting, blasting rock. I still remember that very, very vividly.
So it does sound quite exciting.
Yeah, but I remember, going to lab sessions at 8 in the evening or 10 at night.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't work with the noise during the day. And we had some lecturers who were more eccentric than others, and so...
About the course itself, you yourselves are actually a mixture. Engineer Cousins, you are an electrical?
Electrical and mechanical.
And the two of you are mechanical. And
two electricals.
Two electrical and one mechanical.
I have a colleague with me who completed the course with me, but he's in Canada. He's based in Canada now, so we hope to see him later on in the year.
But you weren't the only ones on the course, obviously. You're three of them, but there were other people as well.
Yes, nine of us. There were six electricals, two mechanicals, and one who followed the civil engineering course.
And this fact that you were different types of engineer together, civil, electrical and mechanical. Obviously, you had to be like that because you were a small group, but do you feel that the use of that mix of areas was beneficial at the time?
I think it had to do with the course structure. I mean, it was a very big jump from the teaching methods that we were used to at the Lyceum and to international standard lecturing. I mean, I still remember lecturers trying to ask them questions, and they would tell you, you look that up yourself. Soldier, when you tell them, it's very difficult for us. Just soldier on, you tell us. I mean, it was a very big difference in the style we're accustomed to. But, year one together, that was a necessary sort of arrangement. First of all, I mean, we're only two mechanical. I'm sure that the course would have started with only two students. So that was beneficial from that point of view. Secondly, the course was not so popular at that time. In fact, it used to take place 1 year yes and 1 year no.
In fact, I was going to ask about that. So when was the next one?
The next one was 2 years after, years later. It was a different...
But it also gave us a good background, not just of the line I was going to pursue, like electrical engineering, but also of the basics of mechanical engineering and civil engineering. So our formation was even better once, you had 1 year at least where all of us, were following all the basics of the different subjects.
In fact, it was a three-year course. The first year was common towards electricals, mechanicals and civils. So we did electrical subjects, mechanical and also some civil structures and fluids, So it was common. The second and third years then we went our way, the electricals, their way, mechanicals, mathematics, we were still together throughout the whole course. So that kept us together, and in fact today we all know each other, we meet occasionally, so we remain friends.
What about the lecturers? Did they have to bring them in from abroad? Were there local people as well?
Most of the lecturers were UNESCO appointed lecturers. They have a very vast experience already in lecturing elsewhere, within the Commonwealth mainly. I must say that they were all very well experienced. However, in certain subjects, such as mathematics, we always had a local lecturer, and also in one other subject, which was, I think, power engineering, We had also a Maltese engineer, part-time engineer, who used to hear. The rest, as far as I remember, they were all foreigners.
The engineering course, even today, has the reputation of being one of the most difficult courses at the university. So I can imagine you really had a lot of work on your hands.
It was tough. I mean, I remember 3-hour lecture at a stretch every week. Thermodynamics. I mean, the lecture just talking away. Rocket engines, thermodynamics, adiabatic expansions, whatever. Yes. It was difficult. I mean, the style was totally different from what we're accustomed to.
And then there were lecturers and there were other lecturers. I mean, we had one of the lecturers who not only had a good way how to deliver, but he also took a personal interest in us. He was very concerned that we would be employed after we finished. I mean, in those days, you know, you think you graduate, they're all waiting for me, you know, to grab me. It wasn't like that. And in fact, this particular lecturer also stayed in contact with us and helped us even after we graduated to give us contacts. I would like to mention his name. His name is John Myers. He was also acting head after we left. We are going to celebrate our 50 years of engineering, and we invited him to come over for the occasion.
We also had some characters who were of a certain eccentricity. We had a certain Mr. Hill, who in fact I think Antoine knows him a bit more. He used to teach us fluids. Almost invariably when I had lab work, he used to bring his dog with him.
Yeah.
Because this dog took priority over anything else, I mean, even over us. But it was a special piece of apparatus whereby he had to steep low in order to read certain levels. And what he did was he just brought a lilo, you know, he lied on it, the dog licking his ears as if him. Of course, we are all in laughter, but at the same time, we had to keep, you know,
a straight face.
He was a real character.
A character.
And
yes.
Then we had another, Dr. McGibbon. He was also a real character. What astonished us in him, he never brought any books, you know, in classroom. What he did was always from memory. You know, he was, you know, sort of exceptional for us to see somebody.
That's what I meant when I said, well, Mr. Kras, you remember Mr. Kras? I
mean, yes.
He used to give us 3 hours lectures, without, as Victor's saying, without referring to any bit of paper or anything. And just keep talking on all subjects you can imagine. Rocket engines, I still remember big lectures on rocket engines. At that time it was, you know, out of this world for us. Power stations, motor car engines, just
from memory.
From memory and, you know, a deep analysis of things, not just blah, blah, blah.
Talking of career advice from Mayors, of course, what did you actually do? What were your memories of your first job, for example? Perhaps I can ask each of you in turn.
The first thing we were concerned with is to get what we call a graduate apprenticeship, because in engineering it's always good if you can spend some time, this is 1 or 2 years, getting your hands dirty, you know, which means learning the skills of engineering, you know. So I think we were all concerned that we wanted to get a good grounding by handling materials, you know, testing meters in the power station, our meters, energy meters. So that was our first concern. Advice, I mean, there wasn't much choice. We either had a job with the electricity generating company, at that time, power station, I think it was called, it wasn't in Malta.
Malta Electricity Board.
Or the telephones department, which was part of the post and telephones. Other than that, you could become a teacher, maybe. You know, so the openings weren't that good. It took me at least 2 or 3 months to get my first job, which was very frustrating.
Yeah. In my case, there was an advert in December when we finished the course for engineers with the telephones department. And I applied for that, and I, together with another couple, were chosen as graduate engineers. Because, as some was saying, the first few years is an induction, and hands-on induction mainly, of you know, what you will be working on to get that sort of experience. In my case, I was sent to UK on a 1 year training course through the British Council, and that helped me a lot because I visited various both industry and the British Telecom itself. I got a very good idea, very good background of what telephony is all about. So when I returned, then this helped me to go up the ladder.
Like Tom was saying, I had to join Bene Malta on what was later known as a graduate apprenticeship. I was lucky, I was posted to the desalination plant at the time it was being constructed, and I still remember doing performance tests on the power station and on these distillers. And then at the end of that time, I was very lucky, I got a scholarship to the University of Glasgow. I got to study desalination. I mean, the university was very good, the professor that we had was international repute, you know, and it was a good start for me.
With me in the Campus FM studio today are Engineer Tom Cousins, Engineer Antoine Riolo, and Engineer Victor Shibaras. The profession itself obviously needed development, and I know that you were involved in the setting up of the Chamber of Engineers, etc. So perhaps you could tell us something about that.
Yes, I was a founder member of the Chamber of Engineers, and I remember our first meeting with Albert Camilleri, who is no longer with us today, an electrical engineer, and Joe Abela from the Royal Marine and Naval Architects. So, we had been talking a lot about setting up the chamber, so we met and we called a general meeting, and the chamber was set up. And I was, in fact, the first honorary secretary of the chamber, and 2 years later, vice president, and then also president. So that was nice. Victor at the time was also a member. It took us a while to get engineering accepted by the government in way of having an engineering act, approved by parliament. And I think I want to give credit here to a colleague of ours, engineer Morris Dabono, who is no longer with us. He worked very hard on the engineering act itself. When we achieved the engineering act, then the government appointed a board, an engineering board, and the purpose was to vet applicants for the issuing of warrant to practice, like the other professions. So I spent a good 8 years on that board as well, the first board, and in that time as well I spent a couple of years as a board member of the Maritime Authority. So this was all like voluntary work, what we did for the profession.
What about the participation in this 50th anniversary celebration, really? I know that the Faculty of Engineering has been very keen to promote engineering and to remember your course, which obviously was very good. So you've been invited left, right and centre, I think, so far.
That's true. I think most of us were present just a few months ago at the awards, the project awards, final year awards. We were given red carpet treatment, sitting right in the front. And personally, I had the honor to cut the 50th anniversary cake with a girl that graduated this year, and I had started the course 50 years earlier. And we cut the cake together. That was a nice moment for me.
Excellent occasion, of course. Women have not been very numerous on the course even of late, but we've increased, I think, now to something like 20% women. So even the engineering course, which was always sort of the bulwark of male dominance, has actually gone down that road as well. When you were in Glasgow, were there any women doing the engineering course?
Doing the master's degree, there were none with me. But in the same year I got my master's in Glasgow, I still remember the newspaper. There was a young lady who graduated as a civil engineer, and she was the first civil engineer to graduate from the University of Glasgow. That was 68.
Yeah, so that's really exciting to see women going into this profession.
But now, I visited universities several years later. It was a few years made a big difference, from the time that I was there.
I believe some of us will be sharing our experiences at the Discovery Week with younger generation of engineers, or even those who are still thinking whether they will take up the course or not. But we are pleased that we can share 50 years of experience with these youngsters.
Yes, I think that will be really important. Discover University Open Day will be happening on the 10th of November, on Sunday, the 10th of November, so I can tell listeners about it, give it a bit of promotion. And this year, the theme of Discover University is going to be this 50th anniversary of the first engineering degree for the University of Malta. And we're dedicating a 20 by 10 tent right in the midst of campus on the main quadrangle. And it will be full of very, very exciting things for everybody to see, really. Simulators and lots of interesting posters and presentations. And as you say, you'll be there as well to talk to people, because I'm sure that there will be people will be very, very interested. There's always a lot of enthusiasm about engineering. And I think that that this will be a great pull. And I hope that lots of people will come and see what we have to offer. Obviously, there are going to be other things, not only engineering. Yes. Going to have a big marquee with lots of different aspects of university. We want to show sort of the university at work when it studies, but also when it plays. So we'll have some fun going on as well. Looking back on your careers now, are there any fine moments that you can think of, and projects that you've been involved in that stick in your mind, or jobs that you've really enjoyed?
I was always involved in water practically in my career. In water, and first as taking part in the endeavors of the Office of the Prime Minister and the Water Works Department at the time. Then, together with others, we set up the Water Services Corporation. And we did a lot of work. I mean, we built the reverse osmosis plants practically from scratch. We got very high-level programs in water leakage repairs and so on, tracing and finding water leakages, which was very difficult and very useful. We did a lot of things. Then I joined the Resource Authority. Again, it was the first time that a regulator for the utilities was functioning. It was
all interesting stuff.
All interesting stuff.
Very good. Engineer Shepard.
Yes, no, my career, I must say, was quite colorful. My first years I spent at the Post and Telephone Department, where I feel I got a very good background of leadership, management in engineering projects. From the start, I was always keen on projects, so I consider myself as a projects engineer. So that was my first 18, 19 years, you know. I was luckily in the transition from the electromechanical switches for, you know, telephony to the digital age. So I was in that transition. A lot happened during those days. And I feel also proud that I formed part of that team. However, then, with the help of my colleague Tom next to me, I found another challenge. And this was in private business. Although I went into business, I still considered myself an engineer. So I don't never call myself a businessman, an engineer in business. And throughout my the rest of the years until today, I managed you know, a company which we set up purposely in engineering, telecommunications in particular, and we were set up in Malta and in Libya. So most of the projects which I was responsible for were both here and in Libya. They are projects of an infrastructural nature, mainly in the telecom sector, which makes me proud today that the man in the street is benefiting from what I was responsible for in those days.
Quite so. Engineer Cousins.
Okay, I spent my first 8 years lecturing, and one day I had to be honest with myself that the engineering subject was advancing so fast, I was being left behind. I mean, you have to study, keep up to date, you know. So it was a struggle. I had 17 hours contact lecture time. In the afternoon we had the labs, you know, you have to study. And I was honest with myself. I said, at this rate, what I know is becoming outdated, you know, unless you study. And I had the external examiner, Professor Farvis, and he told me you should really take up now higher studies, you know. But at that moment I was looking for a business opportunity, and it came within 1 year of looking for it. So I decided to go into business, and I'm quite proud because I set up together with a partner of mine a company specializing in medical equipment and laboratory equipment. In a way that nobody had tackled in Malta, we gave service top priority because the technology was advancing fast, and if you supply sophisticated systems, you need the service. So the company is still active today, about 50 employees, and I am proud that we were on many firsts that happened in Malta. So with automated laboratories in hematology, biochemistry, our company got the first automated instruments, the first MRI we provided in Malta, the first lasers, ophthalmic lasers, you know. So we were always looking at the technology and introducing it in Malta. So it's great to have been there. As Victor said, in our line of engineering, medical especially, you see that engineering is in the service of mankind. And that's a nice feeling, you know, to be in a profession that's helping people, the benefits everybody, is really nice.
Well, that's great. Thank you very, very much, Engineer Tom Cousins, Engineer Antoine Riolo, and Engineer Victor Chebaras, for coming to University Matters on Campus FM to talk about that first course in engineering, the University of Malta, and a little bit about engineering in general and their careers. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to University Matters on Campus FM. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.